When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, thank you for checking out the Performance Anxiety Podcast. My name is Mark and I am your host. No matter who my guest is, I try to connect with each one and make the show fun for them and for me. And sometimes it's easier than others. Mike Squires was one of the most fun shows I've ever done. It was so much fun to speak with, I can see why his podcast Couch Riffs is so popular. We talk about how we started podcasting and recording one-take cover songs with his guests. But before we get into that, Mike discusses his difficult childhood, which actually led him to joining the Marines. And Mike hilariously describes his band auditions after leaving the service. He's forced his way into some great bands like Nevada Bachelors, The Long Winters, and Duff McKagan's Loaded. He's released his first solo album, and he tells me why it's called Number 2, why it's in an 8x8 package, why he's nude on the cover, and why every song is 15 seconds long. Give him a follow on socials at The Mike Squires. Buy Number 2 on Bandcamp and check out all the incredible covers on the Couch Riffs YouTube channel, including the Yes song, Starship Troopers, for Roadie Relief. Follow us at Performance ANX on the socials, and you can support us at ko-fi.com/performanceanxiety or buy some merch at performanceanx.threadless.com. And now I present to you Mike Squires on Performance Anxiety, part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, in one take.
Hi, this is Mike Squires from Couch Riffs. The funny thing about performance anxiety is I don't get it, but one thing that I do before performing is I poop every single time. It's a science fact. If you see me on stage, within the last 10 minutes, I have pooped. The thing is I don't even get nervous. It's just a thing, and it doesn't matter. I could have pooped an hour before, but I'm not nervous. It's just like some sort of weird poop ritual. Yeah, poop. It is. Dad jokes.
I just wanted to give you a list, and this is in no particular order, but these are the guests that you've had on your podcast that I'm jealous of. So there's Vivian Campbell, Earl Slick, Barrett Martin, Wayne Kramer, William Duvall, Paul Gilbert, Terry Date, which I was listening to on the way home today, John Oates, Jeff Schrader, Dweezil Zappa, Mark Ford, Ron Thal, and Greg Gilmore. Those are the ones that I'm the most jealous of.
Clearly, you are my age.
Yes. I'll be 49 in June. Yes.
Yeah, clearly you're not a millennial.
No. Oh, God, no.
Yeah, I've been super fortunate, you know. I never wanted a podcast is the funny thing. And it's still, I look forward to it. But like you were just saying, you recorded three podcasts back to back. When we're done, I have another podcast. Tomorrow I have two, and on Thursday I have another one. You know, I'm getting ready to go on tour in May, and I'm trying to get way ahead of schedule, and April is double stacked. So instead of one a week, I'm putting out two a week.
Yeah.
Because it's a drummer awareness month.
Is it?
And Couch Riffs it is.
I like that.
And so... Yeah, it's a lot of work, as you know, scheduling, recording, editing, and piecing things together.
And you do it all yourself, right?
I do. I mean, it would be great if the podcast was successful enough that I could have someone else do it, and so that it sounded a lot better also.
Tell me about it. I know the feeling.
But, you know, it's kind of like one of those, it's like a recording. It doesn't always have to be a Terry Date production. Guided by Voices makes great records.
True.
And they sound like a fucking tin can going, you know, going down a hallway. Yeah. Just like clang, clang, clang. But it's spirited.
That's true. That is true. So what I want to do is find out how you got into music before we even get started into podcasting, because that's been your main focus for most of your career. It hasn't been the podcast. It's been music. But
yeah.
From my understanding, your childhood really didn't lend itself to a whole hell of a lot. It was pretty rough.
Yeah. I had a pretty rough childhood. I don't, you know, I'm a pretty open book about it.
Yeah.
I never felt like, I definitely went through a period where I was pretty bummed. Like when I first moved out of the house and I was in my 20s, I was like, wait a minute. That was terrible.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how, I'm not meeting anyone that grew up like I did.
Right.
And I had some space. But during the time, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't feel like I was missing out on a ton. You know, we didn't have anything.
Yeah.
There was a lot of criminal element around. So the things that we did have were all stolen.
Oh, wow.
But as a kid, I always loved music. We moved a lot. And the first, you know, the last thing to get packed up and the first thing to get unpacked and moved in was always the record player and the records. And it just was a huge part of what happened wherever my mom and I were living. And, okay. And during the time when my sisters were with us, you know, them too. And so, you know, I grew up with Fleetwood Mac and Boss Gags and Bob Seger, basically, you know, like Steve Miller, the Crystal Gale, whatever was hot in the 70s, the AOR kind of stuff. That was what my mom was into. And I had an uncle that was 10 years, I mean, I still have an uncle. He's 10 years older than I am. He's moved on to listening to new country and this kind of thing now. Man. But when he was a teenager and I was, you know, 6 and he was 16, he was listening to Foghat and Rush and he had all the Kiss records. You know, he was the target market, and I just sort of absorbed his record collection. I just dove right in. AC/DC, Blue Oyster Cult.
Oh man, yeah.
And I was just, you know, they were records, so you could hold the record. If it was a gatefold, you could open it up. It was amazing. So I was really, really into it. From an early age, I was telling my mother, this is what I'm going to do.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. Were you able to take any music lessons, or was this just like a dream you had?
No, I mean, I didn't even know that you had to take lessons. I was 6.
That's awesome.
You know, I mean, I was just like, oh, just get a guitar and I do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like walking. Like, you see someone that has a particular walk and you can emulate them, right?
Right.
And I guess I just kind of figured that's how it worked.
Oh, man.
I guess I got a guitar once when I was in the 6th grade, but I wasn't ready. By the time 9th grade came along, I was totally ready. But in the 4th grade, I joined the school music program and played trumpet. And that was, you know, because you could borrow a trumpet from the school for free.
Yep.
And, you know, back when schools had an arts budget.
Yeah.
That's how I started playing music, you know, playing the trumpet.
So music has always been a big part of your life then.
Huge.
And you mentioned that it was something that you wanted to do, but you didn't start off doing that. Now, you entered the military, you joined the Marines. Was that before you really started taking music seriously as a career?
Well, yeah, I joined straight out of high school.
Okay. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Without a healthy mind, being truly happy and at peace is hard. The good news is, therapy works. But what is therapy exactly? It's whatever you want it to be. Maybe you're not feeling motivated right now and would like some tools to help. Or maybe you're feeling insecure in relationships or at work, not dealing well with the stress. Whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better because you deserve to be happy. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Try doing that in person. So join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself because you are your greatest asset. And a special offer to Performance Anxiety listeners, you can get 10% off your first month of professional therapy at betterhelp.com/performanceanxiety. That's betterhelp.com/performanceanxiety. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this podcast.
I the town I grew up in was really very small. There was, you know, sort of one campus that had the elementary, the middle school, and the high school on it.
Okay.
I graduated with 52 other kids.
Wow.
It's the only school in town. It's grown considerably, but it's still a small place. It's called Granite Falls, Washington. And as you can imagine, you know, I had one uncle was super, super encouraging. He was like, he told me basically lies. You're the best guitar player I've ever heard. You can do anything. You know, he was super encouraging, but I didn't believe him because I knew it wasn't true.
Right. You had records.
Most of it I knew wasn't true.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a ton of confidence. The idea of, I knew I wanted to live in Seattle, but I didn't know anyone there. It seemed at that time to drive an hour to Seattle, oh my God, seemed like, you know, an unachievable thing.
Yes.
Now it's like, I feel like I drive an hour to get gasoline.
That's almost my commute to work.
Yeah, right? I didn't have a ton of confidence. I knew that's what I really wanted to do, but it also kind of felt like something that other people did. You know, it didn't feel like something that was altogether achievable for me.
Really? Okay.
But joining the Marine Corps definitely got me a taste of, I don't know if I would call it the real world, but it was, you know, it was some real part of the world that wasn't, you know, like being a young adult.
And you've heard a couple other podcasts that you've been on. So from what I heard from there, the Marines sounded a lot more stable than the house, the conditions you were growing up in. I mean, you had one of your uncles shot dad.
And, you know, gun. Yeah. Yeah. That's a fact.
That's insane.
Yeah, there was the Squires fellas are a fearless crew. They're they're a unique bunch. I love them. I love those guys. I mean, to my dying day, they're family, but man, they had some crazy years. They've mellowed out. You know, they're not up to the same shenanigans. Thank God. But I had to leave. If I didn't leave, I for sure would have died or gone to prison or both.
Wow. So was music still a thought after you entered the Marines? Were you able to indulge in that at all while you're in the service?
I had a guitar. I had a guitar while I was there, a little guitar and an amp. And it's the same guitar that I had when I moved to Seattle. Unfortunately, it was a Jackson, and it ended up being like the threshold that kept me out of every band audition that I went to. Oh, and people would just look at me, and I'd have my Marine Corps haircut, and just like, I was never a skinny, wafy little guy. I was always like, you know, let's throw this heavy thing over there.
Right.
And, you know, I got a little bit of a dim, not a dimwit, but, you know, like I'm not Chris Cornell.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know, that could have played a part. And I just, you know, I never looked cool. I never looked grunge.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
So, I've told the story before, but I showed up for one audition and they opened the door and looked at me and said no and closed the door.
Oh God, not even hearing a note. Jeez.
No, it was great. I mean, whatever. Those are great experiences. And look at me. I did fine.
Yeah.
Those guys. I don't know what, you know, I don't know who it was, probably Candlebox for all I know. who fucking knows?
But after you left the core, you got some interesting jobs before you really started getting your feet into the music industry.
My friend Jeremy from Granite Falls, he was a little more adventurous than I was, and he had some family friends and stuff in West Seattle. So he had moved to West Seattle and had this apartment that he lived at with his girlfriend, and he worked at a cemetery, and he got me a job there. So I came back to Seattle, to Washington, moved straight to Seattle. And, you know, I think the next day or 2 days later, I started a job as a grave digger.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Which is another good, like a lot of good story. I, you know, at the time it was kind of funny and weird. And it was like, I don't know if I tell people this, it probably seems kind of weird.
Yeah. That's not a good pickup line.
No, not really. I mean, it will certainly draw a type.
Well, yeah.
We saw some funny stuff in that cemetery, too. It was, yeah, we saw some funny things showing up.
Oh, I can imagine.
When the sun is coming up, people are out there doing things.
Doing things.
People are out there doing things, you know.
Doing stuff in the graveyard, no problem.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that I did that, and I worked in the Pike Place Market, and
oh, cool,
which is really, really, really cool.
Is that the one where they throw the fish around?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I've never been there. That's great. I've never been to the West Coast, so I gotta get my ass out there one of these days.
Oh, you should. Yeah, Seattle's go in the summer. It's beautiful, but don't let it fool you into moving there.
Okay.
everyone visits in the summer and they're like, oh my God, this is paradise.
Oh.
And then October comes and then it's like, you know, it's just like, it's like the lettuce section in the grocery store where it's just like this constant mist that's falling on everything.
Oh.
For like 8 months.
I had something like that when I lived in Alabama. It was just, but it wasn't mist. It was just humidity. Heat and humidity, yeah, for like 8 months of the year. It was gross. I had a job in sales. And so I would be outside sales, knocking on doors all day long. And from my front door of my house to my car was maybe 20 feet. And I would walk outside. By the time I got to my car, my back would, and this is not, I'm not even exaggerating, we'd just covered in sweat.
I hate that.
And then you got to go and talk to people. I'm like, hey, yeah, how's it going? Pit stains. Yeah. Oh, disgusting. Like, yeah, I want to buy something from you.
Yeah. Oh,
God. So how did you start getting into bands? I mean, were you forming bands or were you?
No, I didn't know anyone, man. You know, I put some ads in what was called the Rocket magazine back then. That was the rag, you know.
Okay.
That was like the arts and entertainment, the edgy.
Like the Seattle, you know, version of the Village Voice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where they could use cuss words and stuff. Ooh. In their articles. I was just like, that was real edgy.
That's badass.
I was in, yeah. And I had put an ad in there when I still lived in Granite Falls and, you know, played with a couple people, just whoever was brave enough to drive out to our house and jam in the little trailer with me. Actually, back then, a girl showed up and she had her guitar. She called me and I was just like, you know, I was a kid and I grew up in a place where, you know, girls were not encouraged to do whatever they wanted, right, anything they wanted. And this girl called me and she was like, yeah, I'm into Slayer and Metallica. Oh. Do you want to jam? And I was just like, I guess so, you know. And she showed up, she drove out, and it was clear almost straight away, I had no business playing. She was so good.
Really? Oh, cool.
And that was a really good experience for me, because there weren't any other things happening that were going to teach me that lesson or educate me that a chick could shred my fucking face off.
If only she knew you were going to be a gravedigger at one point.
Right?
Man.
But yeah, I responded to some ads. That, like I said, door closed after door closed after we'll call you. And I just would go out. I would go out, see shows. I didn't really know how to talk to folks. And then I finally saw a band. I ran into the drummer at the bar afterwards, and he told me where he worked. And he worked in West Seattle, which is where I lived.
Okay.
And he was like, yeah, our bass player is quitting. And I was like, I'm going to go to this guy's work.
Oh, wow.
Cause he worked at a coffee cart, you know? Okay. So I was like, all right, cool. I'll find out what this espresso stuff is about.
Changed your life.
So I go there and totally lie to him and say, yeah, I'm a bass player. I play bass. And he was like, oh, well, here's a tape. Learn a couple songs. And I just learned, I wanted to be in a band so bad. I just learned all the songs. I had to borrow a bass for my brother-in-law. Oh, wow. You know, I was really nervous, but I really wanted the gig. And they were like, great, you're in the band.
Wow.
Just like that. And so I did that for, I don't know, a year and a half or 2 years.
Man.
But wanted to do some more stuff. You know, it wasn't necessarily the band that I dreamt about being in, but it was great. That, like, those guys remain my friends to this day.
Oh, that's great.
And I learned so much just about playing gigs, about gig etiquette, about... Do you know what I mean? Those are things that no one tells you.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe kids now, you know, they go to School of Rock and they're like, all right, make a pedal board. Don't go up there and set your pedals up one by one. You know, make a pedal board, bring it up there, have all your cables ready. Yeah. Don't take your cymbals down on stage. That'll get you kicked in the ding ding. Okay. There's a lot of stuff that people, you know,
yeah,
don't maybe seem obvious when you don't understand what a 15-minute set change is or whatever.
Yeah. Well, now there's YouTube videos for all that.
Yeah, exactly. I could be a journeyman influencer.
Oh, there you go. So I was trying to find and listen to as much of your discography as I could. Because I like going back and trying to and hearing the progression. It's always fun for me. But I couldn't find any videos or any music for L.A. Lambs.
L.A. Lambs?
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Man, this is the second time this has happened. All right, so it says L.A. Lambs. That's on Discogs. Showing as your first credit. L.A. Lambs on the album A Little Lost. Let me pull it up here.
Here's something really funny. There's another guy named Mike Squires, and this poor guy, he gets tagged in so many things on Instagram because his handle is at Mike Squires and mine is at the Mike Squires, because he had already, you know, he had joined before I did.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's a musician. He's like a rapper and a hip hop producer.
Oh, wow.
And a real go getter.
Yeah. And I did find a baseball player named Mike Squires too.
Yeah. Yeah. They played for Chicago. Yeah,
I believe so. But this is same time frame, 1997, and it's garage rock, alternative, experimental. And the band is called L.A. Lambs. The album's called A Little Lost. And I couldn't find it anywhere, but I do know now how to shear and castrate a lamb.
Oh, wow. I wonder YouTube. If I recorded on something back then and I don't even remember.
Does it say
where it was recorded?
It says lead guitar and bass, Mike Squires, vocals, drums, keyboard, bass and guitar, LD Anderson, and vocals, percussion, bass guitar, and keyboards, Laura A. And that's as much information as I have on it. But apparently you did a cover of Tomorrow Never Knows. It's on Death and Taxes.
Nah, I don't think that's me.
That's crazy. That's the second time this has happened.
That's pretty good.
First was Ken Andrews, actually, which was
really?
A little bit embarrassing, but I kept it in.
Is it?
I'm talking, I'm like, hey, what is this band? You're like, it's called something like the Wonder Girls or something. And I'm like, you did a cover of, God, I don't even remember what it was. It's like some like Super Tramp or something, something weird. And he's like, what the hell is that? I'm like, I don't know. It's like some group you're in with. It shows you, Scott Weiland, and all these other people. And he's like, I never did that. I was like, well, it's on Discogs. It's linked right to your profile. He's like, I know the guy who runs Discogs. I'm going to call him after this and we'll get this straightened out.
I wonder if that's one of those weird, there was this weird thing that was happening. I know people can hack and do this and that, and you can probably tag stuff on Discogs, but
possibly
for a while, my Spotify was hacked. And so I would be listening to whatever I was listening to, and all of a sudden just some like crunky mumble rap would come on, and I would push stop and I would close the app and restart it and start my song again, and then it would happen again.
Oh, wow.
And so I eventually had to go in and change my password.
Really? That's so weird.
And so I think what would happen is people would pay some skeezy person to go in and just like run up their numbers on their plays.
I don't doubt that.
And they would hack people's Spotify accounts to do it.
Oh man, I heard the best way to get your stuff going is to put your playlist on bands you like, maybe who need a little bit more exposure, and then just put on right before you go to bed. And then just let it play for like 8 hours and people get their stream bumped up a little bit.
Is that how that works?
I think so. I think that's what people are doing. I think that's the only way to explain some of this crap that gets really popular. But
so get off my lawn.
All right. So we're going to go past LA Lambs. So Nevada Bachelors was that your first recording experience then?
No, that band that I joined, that I lied my way into, I recorded with them.
Oh, cool.
Playing bass. That band was called Eat the Feeling, and it was kind of like a jam band. It was kind of grungy, clean guitars with like envelope filter leads and wah-wah and there was a lot of music happening.
A lot going on.
There was a lot of music happening, and some like Jarl-y kind of quasi folk Jarl vocals.
Oh.
And it rocked sometimes. It wasn't like heavy. It was I wasn't in Helmet,
right?
You know, or I wasn't in Jesus Lizard, or even Fire Hose, which I would have loved.
Oh God, but, yeah.
We made a record. That was my first recording experience.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And then between that and Nevada Bachelors, just demo recordings.
So how did you get into Nevada Bachelors?
That I had quit playing music.
Completely?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was just like, I'm 25 and I haven't made it yet. I'm going back to school.
Okay.
So I quit playing music and I lasted... like 2 or 3 weeks at community college. And I was like, this is not for me. And, I guess there was that part of me that was like, well, I'm 25 and I haven't made it. I guess I'm not talented. Maybe there's something else I can do in music.
Okay.
And so I started sort of like, I'll put this in air quotes, managing Nevada Bachelors, which was a 3-piece band, friends of mine. And, so I was like booking and managing them. And then they were going to make a record, and that might be the only band that I was ever asked to join, actually.
Oh, really?
That I didn't like ask my way into.
Yes. See, that's Squire's DNA, man. That's getting your way into these bands, forcing your way in, man.
It's a sturdy stock.
It is.
So I had been in the band for a month when we made that record, the first record, Carrots and So On.
Okay.
And, and I had only been playing guitar for a month.
Oh, wow.
You know, I didn't even own a guitar. I traded my bass for a guitar so that I could have a guitar to be in that band.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
To Doug, the drummer of Eat the Feeling, who still has that bass, and I still am trying to get it back from him. It's a 77 Music Man Stingray. It's fucking
wow,
a beast. I've borrowed it a couple times, but it's great.
So it wasn't you. You didn't trade it for a Jackson, did you?
No. Okay.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
So, yeah, we made that record. You know, did a bunch of gigs. And then Jason Finn from the Presidents of the United States of America joined the band.
Oh, wow.
And we made another record. We made that first record with Johnny Sangster, who is a great producer in Seattle. Also killer guitar player, singer.
Oh, really?
He ended up having a band with Rob, the singer of Nevada Bachelors. And he worked at Egg, which is Conrad Uno's now, you know, gone studio.
Oh,
which tons of legendary records.
Yeah.
Everyone recorded there. Young Fresh Fellows, Posies, Fastbacks.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Mudhoney.
Yeah, I'm one of those geeks that reads all the liner notes.
I mean, so that record was recorded at Egg. And then the second record we recorded with Martin Fevrier at Jupiter. That record's called Hello Jupiter, because that's what he would say.
It sounded like your dog just exploded when he hit the ground.
He jumped off my lap. Yeah, he's like, I'm going to go over here and smell the door.
It sounded like he exploded as soon as he hit the floor.
We have exploding dogs over here.
It's a West Coast thing. Well, you're in the East Coast now.
Yeah, it's definitely
it's a New York
aggressive
thing.
East Coast thing.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to Nevada Bachelors, and one of the coolest songs is, I love the half song Matador.
Oh,
that song
is pretty funny. The lyrics are so ridiculous.
They are. They're great.
Matador.
And I'm not sure how Mitzi and Darius segued into that. I'm not sure if there's a reason the two are together, but it's just...
We just had these two short songs, and we were like, well, on Abbey Road, they had all those songs. You had Came In Through the Bathroom Window, and like the songs that would kind of overlap or whatever.
Yeah, like the minute and a half long.
And so we just kind of did that. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay.
We played a reunion show, two reunion shows in Seattle, you know, like a week before everything shut down in 2020.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's awesome.
Mid-February. Yeah.
I mean, how did that end? Because the next thing you're in is Alien Crime Syndicate, and the song Ozzy cracked me up. So,
yeah.
Another song with a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
that band was cruising along. The second record came out. We played a couple shows, and I joined Harvey Danger.
Oh, so that was before Alien Crime Syndicate?
Yeah, for a while, Harvey Danger, Alien Crime Syndicate, and Loaded were all happening at once, which was a pretty great feeling.
That's amazing.
Three great and relatively varied gigs for me. That sort of like, I felt like I was getting all my yah-yahs out. Like I was able to do all of the things.
And they're all different.
Alien Crime Syndicate, it's like a cross between Weezer and the Scorpions or something, you know?
Yes. It's three completely different sounds in those bands.
Yeah. So I think Rob, the singer of The Bachelors, was bummed that I was going to go away on tour. But, our band was never going to go on tour. He had a lot of responsibilities, just raising a child, and he had a mortgage, and, you know, none of us had any of those kinds of responsibilities. But yeah. I wanted to go on tour. I wanted to do everything. And I, you know, it was kind of like one of those situations, like my first band, where it was like, well, this isn't doing everything that I need to do. So I don't want to quit, but I'm going to do more other things. Yeah. Also.
Sounds reasonable.
But it didn't work, you know, wasn't well received. And so the band broke up.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, the band broke up just like, you know, 2 or 3 months after our record came out, which was a drag. And I was really heartbroken. And, you know, and Rob and I are on great terms and, you know, whatever. That's all well past us. But I couldn't sit around on my hands. But also, I had a national tour to go on.
With Harvey Danger, right?
With Harvey Danger. So my first real national tour was on a bus and flying around and playing festivals. Wow. And it was crazy.
It's a great way to break in.
I was fortunate. I talked my way into that. You know, I just heard that there was an opportunity. I said, I can do that. If you need a guy, I'm your guy.
And this was after their hits on the Flagpole City.
This was for the second record. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, we flew down to LA, made a big video, and I don't, you know, did all the things that I wanted to do.
That's awesome.
Super awesome. And then I heard Alien Crime Syndicate needed a guitar player, and Nabil was a drummer in that band. He owned a record store called Sonic Boom in Seattle.
Oh, nice.
And he's the president of Beggar's Banquet now.
Is he? Wow. Jeez.
No, he's got it all worked out. He's doing a good job.
Nice.
He was like, yeah, we lost our guitar player. And I was like, I'll do it. And just like everyone, they laugh at me. They're like, oh, yeah, sure. I was like, no, really. I can learn your songs and I could play a show next week without a rehearsal.
Wow.
And that's something that I think that I could do with a lot of bands. And what I came to learn a lot later is that that's kind of how a lot of people operate. But I had never been exposed to that kind of high wire act, you know?
Oh, man. Is that how you got in with Duff too?
Yeah, but I never had the opportunity to say directly to him, like, I'm your guy. And I don't know if I would have been so bold, but the guy that recorded the second Nevada Bachelors record, Martin Fevrier, he was making a record with Duff, and Jeff Redding, who was the drummer, the original drummer in Loaded, you know, I kept hearing about this record that was being made and how they were going through guitar players and not, you know, they couldn't find someone that they wanted to have in the band. And I said to Jeff, like, hey, what about me? And he was like, you know, because he knew me as like the Harvey Danger guy.
Yeah.
And the Nevada Bachelors guy and the bass guy. And I was like, I can do that. Like, I learned Appetite for Destruction in the 11th grade, front to back. Like, wow. I can do it. And he's like, well, it's not really like Guns N' Roses, bro. So, and I was like, don't care. I can do it. Like, you should have me in. And he was like, we'll think about it. And then I just called Martin at the studio. And I was like, let me have a crack. And even Martin was like, But when they let me come down there, somehow, you know, Martin is really easy to work with. He's amazing. And so he has always been able to, I've made a number of records with him, and he's always been able to pull really good stuff out of me, or at least the best that I can give out of me. And so, you know, I have him to thank for whatever I put on that record. And so I spent, you know, an hour and a half there and played on two or three songs, wrote parts and performed on two or three songs. And then Duff called me, you know, the next week when he heard the stuff. I, you know, it was like one of those classic situations. I didn't think it was really him.
Oh.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You know.
Click.
Fuck you, Jeff.
Yeah.
And that was that. I mean, we played some local, like tiny local shows. And then like 2 months later, we were doing an arena tour in Japan. It was fucking awesome. I was on top of the world doing crazy stuff that I just never, I wanted to, I dreamt and I fantasized about it. And, you know, all the Harvey Danger stuff, that was all very cool. Most of it was, there were club shows for the most part.
Right.
There were some festivals and those were great, but there's something very much different about playing in an arena or in a theater, because those look like the from stage photographs on the gatefolds of records. Yeah. And when you see that image in real life, it triggers all of those emotions you know, that you had as a kid looking at those records. And none of that stuff was ever lost on me.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was like the hair on my arm standing up talking about it right now. It was pretty cool.
That is awesome.
And so, yeah, Loaded is, you know, not broken up. We're inactive, obviously, but, you know, I've done so much cool stuff because of that band in particular. So goodbye, my dear old friend. It's all quiet on Mother's Day. Your baby's grown and gone away. It's all quiet on Mother's Day. A forgotten Mitchum Gray.
That is so. At any time, Duff could call him like, "Hey, I got some songs. Let's put something together."
I mean, he knows I'm available. I talk to him regularly.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I think I'm saying that's awesome a lot in this segment here, but it is. it's so cool. It doesn't sound like you ever actually did a tour in a crammed in a van or anything.
Alien Crime Syndicate did plenty of van tours. And Long Winters, I did a van tour with them.
Oh, that's right. Long Winters. Yeah.
But Alien Crime Syndicate crisscrossed this country in a van and trailer. And,
man,
you know, with our old van with no air conditioning in the East Coast summer.
So you have done it all.
I think so. I think so. Yeah.
And we didn't even really touch on Long Winters. I know we're getting a little short on time. I want to get to a couple other things here. But was Long Winters a same situation where you insisted you could do it? Or were you actually asked to do that one? Or
so John Roderick, the leader of who is the Long Winters, I lied his way into Harvey Danger also. because they needed a keyboard player. I was like, hey, Sean's going to call you and ask you if you can play keyboards. Just tell him, yeah. and he's, of course, a much more capable keyboardist now. But then he was pretty bad. He was like, he was learning, and he was, and Jeff, the guitar player, is like a trained, he was like a child prodigy pianist and violinist with perfect pitch.
Oh.
And so, you know, as annoying as our out of tune, like knuckle dragging rockness was to him, he was also a little bit annoying to us when he'd be like, hey, your G string is a little sharp.
Oh.
And then, but he really has perfect pitch. I could play a note and be like, oh yeah, smarty pants, what's this? And he'd be like, that's a high C sharp.
Oh,
be like, ah, you fucker. He said, but it's a little flat.
Oh.
He could sometimes like give you how many cents flat it was. It was really, it was very strange.
Insane. But
when that band sort of came to an end, John decided he was going to start a band. And he came over to my house a couple times. And we worked on the song Scent of Lime, which I, on that first record, eventually I played guitar and bass on.
First things I remember hearing is the They Might Be Giants cover.
Oh yeah, so cool. I was on that one.
Yeah, that was really cool.
I played a bongo solo on that. I played a fucking bongo solo on that. Yeah.
That's great.
my lone percussion credit. Is that on Discogs? I gotta get a hold of Ken and get the number for the guy at Discogs.
Oh, that text. Let me see. I can pull up. Let's see. Yes, bass, congas, and harmony vocals, it says.
Yeah. Nice. That sounds right. John came over, we worked on that song. I tracked on that song for the record. I think originally Joe Skyward played bass on that song.
Okay.
And someone else played drums, and then Jason Finn and I, Jason from The Long Winter, or from Nevada Bachelors and Presidents, we were the rhythm section, and then I went back and did guitar on it. Joe Skyward was in the Posies and Sky Cries Mary, and also was in Sunny Day Real Estate.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I always liked Sky Cries Mary. That was a good band.
Yeah.
I want to find, okay, when did podcasting start to get its claws into you? Because you mentioned at the very beginning that you never really even wanted to do a podcast. And I was very similar in mind. I kind of got forced to do a podcast, and it just hasn't stopped ever since.
During or immediately after sort of the dissolve of the lineup of Harvey Danger that included me, John, and everyone else, John and Sean were talking about recording conversations they were going to have and post them on the internet. And I was like, you guys sound like pretentious assholes. Who wants to listen to you talk? Yeah. This was like 2002 or three, you know?
Wow.
And they were very forward thinking.
No kidding. Like,
that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. And then podcasts start to grow, and I'm like, interesting.
Yeah.
And then I guess I never wanted a podcast. When I started doing Couch Riffs, I wanted it to be this like lo-fi couch talk show where we play, and the earliest things that I made approached what I wanted it to be.
Okay.
But it wasn't exactly. So I just, you know, I wanted to sit on a couch with someone and have a conversation like it was a some kind of knuckle dragging talk show and get a chance to play a cover to a backing track with my guest.
And the whole music part of it, that was going to be like a one take thing, right?
Yeah. All of those things, every single one of them, that was the first take. That's, period.
God, I love that. And that was so the much. Thing.
Because, you know, I originally started doing it by myself, and I'm not a great musician, and anything that I'm musically capable of, it's only because I have worked really hard. Like it did not come naturally. And still, when I listen to myself, because I record myself so much, I'll listen back and just think, I never go back and fix anything. I'm like, all right, well, that's a learning lesson.
Yeah.
I either have to learn how to live with the humanity of it, the flaws, or I have to work harder or find, it's been very therapeutic to me.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing. But all of those things, first take. And you'd be surprised. Like, people were nervous, like, you know, professional musicians.
I can nervous. See that, though, because, you know, first take, man, even if you're a pro, first take is scary.
Look, if you were on national television, you know, if it was like, if you were on Letterman or whatever, that's it.
That's
like,
true.
Here you go. And that's, you know, I wanted it to kind of be like that.
That is awesome. And you've got some amazing stuff. Now, Young Turks was a big one for you. William Duvall, holy crap. I had no idea he could pull off a Rod Stewart like that. Holy
crap. He's amazing, right? He was so good.
That was incredible. I gotta say, I also love Why Can't This Be Love?
Oh, yeah.
That's an amazing Hagar impersonation, too. And Lay It Down, an amazing Stephen Piercy.
Oh, yeah. That's Stephen McSwain, my buddy Steve McSwain.
Those are amazing tracks. I mean, I haven't had a chance to listen to every single one of them yet, but I'm going to, because just on the ones I've heard, they just blow me away. Easy Lover, another really cool track. And they're not your standard songs. Like, I'm a huge Jeff Buckley fan, so Everybody Here Wants You. Are you picking the songs, or how is it like you're getting three or four or five people together and picking an unusual track like Everybody Here Wants You?
All of the projects start in a number of different ways. I have between 10 and 15 of these things going at any given time. I'm working on 12 now. I'm sitting on 3 that are done. Ugh. 2 are done and edited. One is a great big 10-minute long charity video. It's a Yes song that has like 16 people in it. It's pretty over the top.
Oh, man.
The other one comes out next week. Yeah, so it starts a number of different ways. It might just be a conversation with just one other person, and we'll just start talking about fun songs.
Yeah.
I'm big on like that 1991 sort of R&B, like pop R&B. I love that shit.
Oh, really?
I love all of it. Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
That explains some of the song choices I saw on your page there.
Well, you have to understand, you know, I'm sure that I would have been exposed to that music anyway if I had stayed in Granite Falls, because it was on the radio. Although, I mean, you'd have to be listening to that radio station. But
yeah,
at that time, I was in the Marine Corps and I was in the barracks. And so there, the barracks, that's a melting pot, you know. And so I got exposed to a lot of different music from being in the Marine Corps, which is another benefit of that.
Oh, you know? Okay.
Of course, now we have the internet, so you don't have to worry about...
And Spotify just throwing shit in your feet.
Yeah, exactly. But But it just starts with a conversation, and I have a wish list playlist on Spotify that I send to people. If there's an obvious thing, you know, sometimes it'll be a like conceptual, and I will want to do an Edie Brickell song or, you know, whatever, something like this.
Okay.
Just or an all indie rock band doing a Slayer song or something. But I think there's over 70 videos on my YouTube channel, which is, when I saw that, it kind of snapped my head back.
Yeah, that's crazy. Oh, I got to go back and listen to it. I haven't had it, like I said, I haven't had a chance to listen to all of them, but I'm just blown away by it. And I'm just thrilled. I cannot wait to hear this Yes, because I love Yes. I had John Anderson on the podcast once. That was one of the...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, dude, you know what was crazy about that? We're talking, he did live on the podcast. He did this weird Mongolian throat singing thing.
Tuvan throat singing.
Yeah. He did it on the podcast for me.
Two-tone singing.
Yeah, he did it.
Wow.
Which, you know, being falsetto, it's kind of weird.
That's amazing.
But the problem was that he was in this big room. He's got this big, huge room full of instruments and stuff, and it was super live. So his entire channel is full of echo and reverb. And I'm like,
right.
Oh, this is the best sounding audio. It's so cool. I'm talking to John Anderson, but I wish I could get a little better audio out of this.
My hope is to get Yes to officially endorse this video. It's a charity video for roadie relief.
Okay.
And there's 16 people in it. Greg Gilmore's in it.
Oh, God, I love it.
Janet Weiss and Quasi. Don, my mixer. I mean, Alex Skolnick, Steve Stevens. There's Richard Fortus from Guns N' Roses.
Wow.
There are a lot of people in this video. So that video will come out, and we will open up slots for people to donate money directly to Roadie Relief, and then I will send them stems for the song, and they will record a part of the song and film themselves, and I'll cut and mix them into a version of the video for themselves.
Wow.
Pretty That's cool.
Amazing.
So it's kind of like a rock and roll fantasy camp.
Yes.
But, you know, if you want to sing with Steve Stevens, or you want to play bass, you know, with Greg Gilmore, or, you know, whatever.
Man, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. You're coming out with your first solo album, or is it?
Yeah.
But it's so weird.
It's very strange.
It is so bizarre. I love it. I didn't realize exactly what it was when I heard it. I had no idea. It was the digital version, 15 second songs.
Yeah.
How did that concept come about?
So we were living, my wife and I, we were living in Brooklyn, and that's where I started Couch Riffs. So we bought a house up in the Hudson Valley 4 years ago.
Okay.
And three years ago. And that's when I started doing the podcast, because all of a sudden it became very difficult to get people to come over and sit on the couch, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that. Then also, you know, my wife was still working in the city a lot. And, you know, she's working in the city this week.
Okay.
So I'm just kind of, that's how I can sort of like double down and get a bunch of extra work done. So I just, you know, I didn't have much to do. I would come home from work, I would pick up the acoustic guitar, and I would start trying to learn songs. And it's all documented on my Instagram. If you go to my Instagram, you know, whatever the little, you know, the things you can save and the little circles under your profile.
Is it Reels?
They're Reels, but they're like, you know, some kind of saved series of Reels.
Yeah, the little, like you said, the little circle things. Okay.
Yeah.
God, we're old.
We sound really hip.
Click that little big circle thing.
Fucking hipsters. So you can see all of them there, and all warts and all. Me trying to play guitar and sing fucking, you know, Big Star songs and Terry Reed songs.
Oh,
and
wow.
Basically songs I have no business trying to sing. And I was like, maybe I should try and, you know, but basically because they're those clips in the reels are only 15 seconds long, right?
Yeah.
It just was a pain in my ass. I hate it. Like if it was 47 seconds, it'd be 3 15-second things. And then this 2 second thing. And I'm just ADD enough that I've just, I can't have that. Can't have that. I can't have 2 seconds just like dangling out there in the space.
Right.
So I would go in, then I would cut that off. And so eventually that frustration just morphed into me writing 15-second songs, and they were ridiculous songs. I mean, they're all songs that ended up here, like Truck Nuts. I'd had a whole series of songs about truck-related things and redneck-related things, because although Granite Falls is a decidedly redneck place, it had been a long time since I was like back home, so to speak.
Okay, yeah.
So you know, I had a song called like Bedliner and Rednecks Running Weed Eaters After Dark and Truck Nuts, which made the record.
Yeah.
Yeah, but most all of the songs are documented there. That was the first version of all of these songs. And then I thought, I should just demo these and see. I should demo a couple of these. And then I did, and I liked the way they sounded. And I used, a lot, you know, like programmed drums. And then I thought, oh, maybe I'll record a bunch of them and I'll put them on a record. And then the concept just sort of snowballed, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So, and it eventually turned into, I mean, there's nothing about this project that I haven't over-considered. From the title.
Oh, yeah.
From the title to the box that I ship it in is print. I have a custom printed box that I ship the book in.
Wow.
Because, you know, the record, you have the digital version, but which has got 4 extra songs.
Yes.
The physical version is, it's on a flexi disc.
That's awesome.
You're old enough that you remember flexi discs.
Oh yeah, the only one that I have left is an old Holly and the Italians flexi disc. So, that's the only thing I have. I think the rest of them disintegrated.
I think I have like a Greg Howe one that I got out of a guitar magazine. Or it might be Steve Vai, it might be Blue Powder, one of those.
Oh,
you know,
wow. Like Passion and Warfare.
So, yeah, it just, you know, all of the songs are super derivative of either a specific genre or a specific band.
Yeah, they're all different. You know, basically, they're all different genres. All 15 tracks sound completely different.
Because conceptually, I wanted it to play through like you were on Stories. That's what it's called. Instagram Stories,
yeah.
And it's just like blasting past you 15 seconds after 15 seconds, right?
Right.
So I wanted to make this record be reflective of how we take media in on a daily basis. So we're just staring at our phone and it's just like blasting past this, right?
Yeah.
But if you drop your phone like that, is it real? Like if your phone is dead, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, right? So I wanted to create this piece of art that was the physical realization of an Instagram feed.
Wow.
So these 15-second songs, it's funny because, you know, if you have a favorite song, you can't put the needle on the little record.
I
wanted
that.
People to see it. I wanted people to, you know, I didn't want it to sit on a shelf. So I made it 8 inches by 8 inches. So you can't put it in with your 7-inch records because it's too big.
Right.
And then it's too awkward to really go on the bookshelf. And so it's kind of got to stay out on your coffee table or on
it.
The top of your record player.
That's a brilliant idea.
It's inside of a book. So the flexi disc comes inside of a book the book cover is one of my favorite. It's like a complete straight lift of one of my favorite albums. It's called Then Play On by Fleetwood Mac.
Okay, yeah.
I've been threatening for years to paint myself onto that white horse that, you know. And so I finally did it. My friend Rick Clue did that for me.
Great.
I posed nude for him.
Nice.
To so that he could get my tattoos accurate. He was like, hey, could you send me some pictures of your tattoos? Sure, no problem. And then Matthew Southworth did all of the illustrations. So inside the book, there's an illustration for every song, a square illustration. And then on the opposing page of the book, there's the song title and all the lyrics, which is a lot of times just the title of the song.
Right. Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of words in 15 seconds.
Yeah. It doesn't give you a whole lot of wiggle room.
And then an overexcited, usually a pretty overexcited story over-explaining, basically oversharing. I wanted it to be very reflective of people's social media.
So it's like an LP version of social media.
That's exactly what it is. I don't know if I would call it an LP,
Is that an LP? I mean, it's 15 tracks, but they're only, it's like.
It's a TP.
Oh.
That's a double because of the number 2 and T for tiny.
Ooh, I like it.
Tiny player or BP, brief player.
Okay.
But the title number 2 record is also, you know, Big Star has number 1 record. So that was taken. And I couldn't very well call it, although I've considered making my next record where I just, all the songs have the same titles as very, very famous songs.
I think Neil Young was going to do that once. Well, wasn't Neil Young going to do that once, like in the 70s? The late 70s?
I don't know.
I think that's where his song Little Wing came from, because it's Neil Young's got a song called Little Wing, and it has nothing to do with the Hendrix song.
What if my second record was just called The Eagles' Greatest Hits?
Ooh, number one record.
Also, just sort of, you know, people don't treat music super well, don't think.
No, not anymore.
Musicians and music, it's just throwaway. And so that's why I put it on a flexi disc. And that's why I called it number 2.
Man, everything's multi-layered.
I thought I've had a lot of time to think.
Yeah. Well, in my podcast, I usually include like 30-second clips of songs, and Life Lesson number 1 is my favorite song on the album. And if I follow my normal format, I can play that song twice.
Life will teach you lessons if you listen. Like number 1, take your shirt off when you photograph with kids, so you'll regret it for the rest of your life. Life will teach you lessons. Photograph with kids, so you'll regret it for the rest of your life.
You could play more than one song if you wanted to. I love that song. I think it's really good.
I think that's definitely my favorite on the album. It cracked me up. And as soon as I heard it, I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. And then before I knew it, the whole thing was over. I was like, wait, I need more. It hasn't even been 5 minutes.
Right, you think it's going to be some kind of like Mott the Hoople, thing, and it's just not.
I thought maybe I had it, like the download had been corrupted or something.
You thought you had the samples?
Yeah.
Like the old, like the iTunes?
Yeah. Oh my God, yeah. Or the Amazon, when you click the play and it plays you like 10 seconds of a song. I did that once. One of my favorite bands is 16 Horsepower.
Oh, yeah.
And they had their album Secret South came out, and they had a song, they do a cover of Wayfaring Stranger. And there's like a 15-second clip where it's just kind of, it's silence. It just kind of sounds like wind. And that's the part that they put on for the sample. So it's like,
how did you get into 16 horsepower? They're from Denver.
Denver, yeah. Oh, well, back when their first EP, Haw, came out,
yeah,
I used to read the guitar magazines religiously. I'd get them all, and I was trying to teach myself how to play guitar very badly. So I would get the tabs and just play along. I was never disciplined enough to keep up with it. But I read a review. I would read all the reviews to see what was coming up. And I read a review of the Haw EP, and it sounded amazing. So I went and just bought it. And I've been a huge fan ever since. I love anything David Eugene Edwards does, I'm in. I mean,
that
album he did with Alexander Haka, I've got every 16 horsepower release. I'm still missing like two Woven Hand releases, but I've got all the weird crap he's done. And I got to see, this is cool, I got to see him play live twice in one evening when I was living in New Jersey. He was playing in Philly on Halloween. He was opening for Grant Lee Buffalo.
Oh, wow.
So I went to, it was at Theater of Living Arts in Philly.
Yeah.
I was going to go, and I don't even know how I found this out, because I don't think it could order. I don't know if I ordered tickets ahead of time and they sent a letter that the venue had changed. So went to Philly, and it was at, from the Theater of Living Arts to this place called the Pontiac Grill. So I was like, oh, okay. So I went and I go to the Pontiac Grill, and there is a letter on the door saying the venue has been changed back to the Theater of Living Arts, but if you bring your ticket, 16 horsepower is going to play here after the show. Bring your ticket and you get in for free.
Wow.
So I went and I saw 16 horsepower open up for Grant Lee Buffalo. And I also love Grant Lee Buffalo. So that was an amazing show afterwards. And I'm by myself. I'm like 22 years old, walking around in Southeast Philly all by myself on Halloween. And I walk down to the Pontiac Grill, and I sit, and I'm sitting there, and I'm the you can't really do anything. So I'm just sitting there like this. This is awesome. Can't move because the place is packed. Saw them play live twice in one night, and then walked back to my car in the middle of the night in Southeast Philly and drove an hour and 20 minutes back to my house. So
wow. You know, my plan with my podcast is to tour it.
Oh, dude, that'd be awesome.
I really would like to tour the podcast. And the concept, the idea is that I do the conversation in front of an audience, mm-hmm. and then assemble a patchwork band from the local pool of talent and hopefully try to keep it, you know, mixed up. If similarly, and perform five or six songs and then peace out.
That is awesome.
It would be pretty fun.
I would go to that show. That would be fantastic.
And, you know, if the guest was local to a town, they would have a draw, and maybe that would be an interesting thing for people to want to come and see. I would still audio and video capture everything, and I would still be able to share it to YouTube that way.
That's a fantastic idea. I love that. And I know a lot of other podcasts do tours, but that's mostly like comedy podcasts, right. And all yours is definitely comedic, but it's interview, so
yeah, it's conversational.
Yeah, exactly, which is exactly what I try to do with mine too. So it's I don't like peppering people with questions. I want back and forth. And speaking of that, listening to one of the podcasts you did, I do have a question. How is your theme song jacket coming along?
Oh, I was just trying to explain theme song jacket to someone today. Let's see. I have some of the components of theme song jacket here.
Oh, cool.
I have an iPod Nano.
I still have mine.
And I ordered that on eBay. I have these are tiny little waterproof flat speakers. They're kind of like coins.
Oh, wow.
And so I'll sew those into the liner of a jacket. And then I have somewhere here, my desk is kind of a mess. There's a little power amp, like a Class D 5-watt power amp. And that will go inside of an Altoids box. And then it'll be wired into this jacket. And then when you walk into a room, you can push play and your theme song will play, like, you know,
like in the movies.
Let people know. Yeah.
I love that idea.
I think it's a great idea. The first, I started a theme song jacket Instagram, and I only follow Jason Finn because I'm making the first theme song jacket for him.
Oh, nice.
His girlfriend is going to steal one of his jackets out of his closet and send it to me.
Nice.
So that I can do the appropriate technological modifications. This is a very highly sophisticated theme song jacket technology.
It is. It's groundbreaking.
Yeah.
I love the idea. I know God, let me see. I think I've kept you. Yeah, I've kept you pretty long here. We've gone over the time that you've got a recording you got to get ready for, and you got to walk your dogs and all that stuff. So
I've got my first interview for April's Drummer Awareness Month.
Oh, who you got? This isn't going to come out for a few weeks. So who's coming on?
Oh, first guest, William Goldsmith.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Pretty good.
All right. So last question about the podcast. Have you had a guest that was kind of intimidating to you? You're friends with a lot of your podcast guests, but like, okay, for example, I know John Oates was one that, God, I'd love Hall & Oates. They're just amazing. You guys seem to get along great, but was there anybody that was kind of intimidating to reach out to or have on?
I was really, the funny thing about that one in particular, I was like, fuck, what do I talk to him about? Yeah. Because I was like, everyone loves Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right. I'm going to listen to his audiobook, and he narrates it.
Oh, cool.
And so I already had at least an audible familiarity with him. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of put me, and so that's one, I learned a valuable lesson when I did that podcast because I was nervous.
Yeah.
It's fucking John Oates.
Yeah.
And I listened to his audiobook, and so that's what I've gone and done for a lot of folks. I've listened to their audiobook, and it puts me a little bit at ease with just hearing their voice and interacting with them. But, you know, I'm a little bit nervous about every single guest I have. Like,
yeah,
am I going to fuck this one up?
I always feel unprepared. No matter how much I prepare for somebody, I feel unprepared, and I'm last minute, I'm always scrambling. What's one thing that I didn't pick up that, cause I going back, I try to listen to interviews that they've done in the past. So I'm not rehashing the same questions that they always get asked. So.
Well, a lot of I'm back and forth on that.
Okay.
Just because I also want the vibe to be sort of like someone is a fly on the wall of you meeting someone at a party.
Yes.
And you're getting to know them. Because that's when questions come up that, like, you'll see a small window of opportunity, someone say something about, you know, whatever. Like, you talking about photography, if you were my guest, I would have gone way down that and just like pummeled you with photography questions because I have no eye for that shit.
Right.
You know, and that's maybe not what people came to hear, but it's what they're going to hear if they stick around. Yeah. And to me, it's fun, and hopefully it's interesting to other folks. If not, that's okay. There's a lot of podcasts.
Exactly.
Did you know there was a lot?
I've heard there's a couple hundred, at least.
Yeah, there at least hundreds. Yeah.
I hear music is still pretty kind of an untapped. True crime is big, but music is kind of an untapped media genre.
Yeah.
Well, man, this has been awesome. Where can people pick up the album? The Flexi Disc is still available, right?
Yeah. Bandcamp. That's the only place it's available. You do not go to any streaming service expecting to find this because I did not put it on any streaming services. And if you purchase the album, you have the option to get the digital version. The digital version also comes as a single audio file. So it plays the entire record all the way through. That's the only way that it comes.
That's great.
That was an artistic choice. And you know, that's how I want you to enjoy it. It is a glimpse into the future. If we're all not a little bit more careful, if we don't all get up and go out for walks and do things that our parents did.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know? That's the hardest thing sometimes is get off your ass.
Yeah. So yeah, Bandcamp, that's where you can find it. Also, it's the Mike Squires. Remember, there's that other guy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So if it sounds like hip hop, it's not me.
So that's your social media handle, is the Mike Squires, so people can follow you.
Oh yeah.
And now you mentioned going out on a tour this spring, mid spring.
Yeah, what's I'm going on tour in May.
So who's
I'm going to Europe and traveling all through the UK and Europe, and I'm super excited about it.
Who are you touring with?
I don't know. I don't feel like I'm supposed to talk about it because it's not my band. It's not Loaded.
Okay.
It's not my band. And I might have let it slide before. And then I was like, I asked them, hey, how do you guys feel about me talking about going out with, you know, going out and playing with you guys? Because I'm just like one of a number of guitar players that fill in with this band.
Okay.
And, you know, just out of respect, I was like, I probably shouldn't go around running my mouth about this. But it's a band that had a lot of hits in the 90s, in the early 90s. And they had big MTV videos, big singles. You would know who they are.
It's not Eve 6.
It's not Eve 6. That would be amazing. Best Twitter to follow.
It is. That guy's great. Man, Mags is awesome.
But, you know, it's all Europe and UK stuff. Still kill it over there. And they have a new record that's great. So I'm just up to my neck learning 25 songs right now.
When the time comes, when you hit out, are you going to be posting that on the socials?
Oh, sure.
Cool. So we'll know eventually.
Yeah. I'll tell you when we're not recording.
Okay. You got it, man. Yeah. And all right. So we got that. We got socials done. We got Bandcamp. Well, podcast with the it's Couch Riffs.
Oh yeah.
And you got some new episodes coming out.
Couch Riffs is available in audio and video format, so if people like to watch people talk, you can find us on YouTube. It shocks me how many views some of those things get. I don't want to discourage people from doing it, but maybe that's how they listen to the playback. I know. I'm just a fucking old dude.
Yeah, tell me about it.
You find Couch Riffs there on YouTube, along with all the video performances that I've cut together.
Which are
and then
amazing.
The audio podcast is on all the, you know, it's in all the places.
Awesome. Well, man, thank you so much. I know we went over what we thought we would do, and you've got other stuff to record, so thank you so much.
That's how it always goes, yeah. Yeah, it always goes. Thanks a lot for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm here waiting for you in the stranger's home. Think I'd be happy.